The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
And back on this historic day, Greg McElroy joins us to get his reaction to the big news now that, of course, it is official. Greg, we've been talking about this for 9 days now, but it is real. It's reality. We don't have to speculate anymore. Your quick reaction.
Amazing. It's just absolutely amazing. And I know, Paul, and I'm sure you've dealt with it and interacting with your callers and the call volume from Texas and Oklahoma, as I've listened, has clearly increased. But it's amazing to me that this was able to happen under such secret issue. Like, how do we not get any wind of this until it's essentially already done, is what's truly remarkable. Was as connected as you are, I do think people are a little concerned about us losing the fabric of college football, but how can we ignore the possibilities of adding the two teams from the Big 12 with the brand equity that both Texas and Oklahoma bring? I think it's amazing. I couldn't be happier for the future of the conference, and I also couldn't be happier for the matchups we're going to get on a regular basis. I mean, you think about it, Texas and Alabama, Texas and LSU, Texas and Georgia, Oklahoma against the aforementioned three. We're going to have incredible matchups week in and week out, and it's going to make for destination viewing each and every Saturday and incredible atmospheres in the stadium each and every Saturday throughout the footprint.
Yeah, and to state the obvious, we get one of the great rivalry games in college football history, a game I know you're very familiar with coming from Dallas. If you just said, you now have OU Texas as a conference game, it's pretty mind-boggling, isn't it?
Well, I've always said this, and granted, yeah, I'm a child of Alabama now, but I was originally a Texan and grew up in Dallas-Fort Worth. And I would credit my love and appreciation for college football because of the Texas-Oklahoma game, the Red River Shootout, as it was previously named. And that was the game that my dad, when we moved to Texas from Los Angeles, California, when I was 10 years old, my dad and I got all bundled up, went to the Texas State Fair, and watched Texas and Oklahoma. We did that 8 straight years prior to me leaving for school in 2006. It was really an amazing experience, and it's a rivalry that I think so many people in this footprint will learn to appreciate, one in which there's no love lost, and one in which there's 50% crimson, there's also 50% burnt orange, and it's divided right down the middle. Not all that dissimilar to what we see in Jacksonville with Georgia and Florida, or Florida and Georgia, depending on what side of the rivalry that you're on. So it's amazing. I couldn't be happier that that is now part of the SEC story. And I also think that as people move away from the newness of it, and I guess the resistance to it, at least at first, I think people will learn that this will be a monumental day for college sports and a monumental day for the Southeastern Conference.
We talk so often about the challenge of coaching in this league. Every time a new coach is introduced, the perfunctory questions are asked. But how much different, I could say difficult, but maybe it won't be. It seems like it will be, though. What are the challenges now for the coaches in this league once we get past Nick Saban and Kirby Smart?
Well, the question, I think it's a matter of perspective. Is it going to be more challenging for Lincoln Riley and Steve Sarkisian, or is it going to be more challenging for the other 14 coaches that are already in the league? The biggest question, Paul, and we could talk X's and O's, we could talk games and matchups and where Oklahoma needs to get better, because I think Oklahoma is obviously the one that is far closer to competing at a high level in the SEC. I think even this year's Oklahoma team, with what they bring back on the defensive side of the football, I think they would be maybe the biggest challenger to Georgia and Alabama at this point. I think LSU, of course, will be really good. I think A&M would be really good. I think those four teams in the SEC currently, if you threw Oklahoma in that mix, I don't think they'd miss much of a beat amongst those five teams. I think they're that good with what they bring back at quarterback, too, and the amount of explosiveness they have on the offensive side of the football. I think the biggest impact, though, is not necessarily going to be felt week in and week out from an X's and O's game planning matchup. It's a recruiting battle. And I think four teams like Arkansas, for teams like Texas A&M that have used that SEC moniker to their advantage on the recruiting trail in the state of Texas. For as long as I can remember, Arkansas has been flooding the Dallas-Fort Worth area and getting a lot of really great players. A&M has made being a part of the SEC and has become a destination for Texas high school football players that want to play in the SEC and yet don't want to leave the state. That's where I think the biggest challenge is going to be met, is how much will players in the state of Texas remain loyal to the programs in the state of Texas? We just saw two twins leave the state of Texas, and now they're enrolled at Alabama, two of the best offensive line prospects the state's seen in quite some time. So that's where it's going to be most fascinating. We'll find that out here probably sooner than later, the impact on the recruiting trail. How much does it benefit Texas and OU, and how much does it hurt some of the teams in the SEC right now?
And, Greg, finally, we don't know when this is going to happen. We know what was said earlier in terms of years down the road. Most people think it will happen a lot sooner. Whenever it happens, what do you think it's going to look like, at least from a structural standpoint? East versus West, does that go by the wayside? Do we get these four pods? What are you hearing?
I haven't heard anything, to be honest with you, with the structure. If I were to weigh in on how I would do it, I would get rid of divisions altogether. I've long been a proponent that we no longer need divisions because the balance of power in the SEC, I'd like to see the best team in the SEC play the second best team in the SEC in the SEC championship game. I think that would assure us the most equitable matchup, because there have been examples, and no disrespect to Florida a few years ago, when Jim McElwain had Treon Harris and the Florida Gators somehow in the SEC championship. No disrespect to Missouri of several years back when they won the SEC East. For a while there, the SEC East was nowhere near the SEC West as far as strength, depth, and quality. So I would like to just get rid of divisions altogether. What I would like to do, I would like for them to say, hey, there are natural rivals already built in the SEC. So Alabama, you're playing Auburn no matter what. That's non-negotiable. Alabama, you're playing LSU. That's non-negotiable. Auburn, you're playing Georgia. That's non-negotiable. Georgia, you're playing Florida. That's non-negotiable. Texas, you're playing Texas A&M. That's non-negotiable. I'd like there to be two or three permanent games on every single team schedule, and then I'd love to see a rotation so that you can go to all 16 schools over the course of a four-year period if they do go to a nine-game conference schedule, which a lot of people are assuming at this point. So I would be a little bit more unique. I wouldn't go with divisions. I'd go with conference record, and then if there's a tie, I'd go with point differential, and that would be how I would try to crown a champion and try to put together the most competitive championship game.
Greg McElroy, and by the way, I apologize, Greg. I shouldn't have asked what you think was going to happen. I know I should have asked what you would do, because I know some have suggested Saban as the czar of football, but I think you should be the next commissioner of the SEC whenever that day comes, because so great to have you on, Greg McElroy, joining us on this very historic day, and we will take a break. Much more to come. It's a busy day, and we are not done yet.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5hourenergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free, no insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/paul. That's hims.com/paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
We welcome all of you back. We're 15 minutes away from a conversation with the Southeastern Conference Commissioner. Andre is up next. What do you got, Andre?
Coach, what's going on, Coach Feinbaum?
We're doing well. Thank you for the call.
Listen, I heard your opening monologue. It was spot on, Coach. I listened to your interview with Kirk Herbstreit. Man, he sounded kind of a little bitter and angry. Wow.
Hey, yeah, man, I was interested in that. We haven't had a chance because we've been kind of wall-to-wall guests, but I am interested in what you thought of that.
Man, he sounded angry and bitter. But listen, things change. Do you want the rotary phone or do you want the iPhone? This is a new day. Things change. You got to move on down the road with him. Listen, a lot of people are blaming the SEC and Coach the Commissioner Greg Sankey for this. But listen, if Farrah Fawcett in her prime asks you out, what you going to say, Coach, if you're single?
I still remember her poster up in my dorm room with the, bathing suit on.
Hey, me too, Coach. Yeah, I remember that. And she had that beautiful smile. So, listen, this is big boy ball. Things change. But I heard a commentator earlier stating that the way the conferences, other conferences, might try to retaliate against the SEC is to limit how many teams they can get in the playoff. They cut it down to three. But listen, man, we want to see the best team in the playoff. But what did you think about Herbstreit, Coach?
Well, I mean, it's complicated for a lot of reasons because, you know, I understand him being a traditionalist. I do. But, you know, I think all of us have to be realistic. Kirk and I work for the same company. We may be in different tax brackets, but we still work for the same company. And, you know, the bottom line is, you know, let's not act like the network that I work for isn't part of all this as well. And I'm not trying to say, you know, I'm not trying to be Bob Bowlesby, but ESPN has a stake in college athletics. Would you not agree?
I agree 100%. But like I said yesterday, I would rather see them in the SEC than the ACC, the Pac-12, and the hated Big Ten. But anyway, I would like to welcome the University of Oklahoma and the University of Texas into the SEC. Hey, thanks for taking my call, Coach.
Yeah, thank you for the call. And what's so interesting about this is no longer just a sports story on ESPN or in your local blog. I just saw a headline from CNBC, which is the most prominent television network that covers the financial world. And I mean, and we can act like this is not going on, but it's not really being genuine or authentic. But the headline is, to understand why Texas and Oklahoma want to move to the SEC, follow the money. I started my career as an investigative reporter, and most every story, the editors always say the same thing: follow the money. That's the root of almost all good and evil, more evil than good. Let's continue with Riker, who is in Memphis. Hello, Riker.
Hey, Paul, how are you?
We're doing great, thank you.
Good. Hey, I'm a Georgia alum and a fan, and you know, I was drum major at Georgia's band for 3 years in the late 2000s. So I mean, I'm a big SEC guy, but I'm really surprised at the lack of commentators and writers not talking about the long-term effects on college football. I mean, Kirk Herbstreit commentated on it so much, I appreciated, but I get the money, I get the power, but I mean, didn't history teach us that absolute power corrupts absolutely? And so, I mean, are we really good with watching what makes college football special die away? I mean, traditions, rivalries, geographic travel for bands and fans. I mean, people are talking about, you know, how geographic stuff isn't going to matter anymore. And it's like they're just killing what makes this special. And, I mean, I hated even having two cupcake games each year. But you know, we were always understood the fact that we had them was to help fund those smaller school programs, because one game against them, against us, you know, Georgia, that would pretty much cover a huge portion of their budget, if not all of it. So, I mean, I feel like Sankey and the SEC played with fire, and that they're going to look around soon and see what all was burnt to crisp. So I'm not on this train of that it's all sunshine, lollipops, and rainbows. I get that it's good for the SEC, but I think this is going to have long-term implications that we don't even know what we're messing with until we look down and see what all we burnt down.
Well, Riker, thank you very much. And anytime we can get a Lord Acton quote on this show, I'm happy. Let's continue with Logan in North Carolina. Hello, Logan.
Hey, Paul. How are you doing today?
We are doing great.
Excellent show. I've enjoyed all the interviews and the guests today. I want to get a quick shout-out to my friend Craig. Paul, I haven't been able to watch you on TV for a while now, so he hooked me up. Now I'm watching on a tablet. So I was listening on radio, but I always like to see your smiling face. So I'm glad I'm hooked back up there, so thanks to Craig. I was just going to talk about conference realignment. And I'm totally on board with what McElroy said. I think they should do away with the divisions and just have the best teams play. You could have those traditional rivals always, like he said, those are the three games you're going to play every year. But switch it up, you know, go to 9 or 10 games. I think that would be a good idea. So I just wonder what you thought about that.
Yeah, I don't know where they are, and I don't think it's even something that the commissioner is in a position to answer yet because of all the other issues. But I think it's a fair statement that somebody's working on that right now, and just to be conventional on that, it doesn't seem likely. I think everything Greg said is spot on. The additional conference game, the doing away with the natural East-West. Although, I mean, I like that very much. I mean, it's fun to talk about it. But, you know, basketball did away with it. It hasn't changed the season at all.
Right. Yeah, I think that's the only way to go if you're going to get these great matchups and figure out the schedule. But one other thing, Paul, Herb Street mentioned something about you just got a contract extension. I didn't hear about that. Like I said, I've been not listening in. But congratulations, and what's the deal?
Yeah, it came out the other day that I'm going to be here for a few more years. In a job like this, Logan, you serve at the whims of your bosses. So when your contract comes up, you're always hopeful that they remember you.
Well, you're indispensable. So that's why I'm so glad I can watch you back on TV now, Paul. So it's really been good talking to you. And I'll try to call in a little more often.
Well, Logan, I'm glad to hear you are back. We missed you, and stay with us. Let's check in with Paul, who is in Maryland. Hello, Paul. Good afternoon.
Hey, Paul. Thanks for taking my call. First-time caller.
Paul. Great to have you back.
So, 1977 graduate of the Fighting Texas Aggies, and very happy the Aggies realized in 2012. The SEC was the conference.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, Texas A&M has been in this league almost 10 years, and you know, just the irony on that day, and I'll never forget it, that we would be sitting here in July of 2021, welcoming the University of Texas. I mean, that is not a bet I would have made. Quite frankly, I'm not sure I would have made it a couple of months ago.
Me either, Paul. Listen, I just wanted to say the SEC has now gone from being the premier college conference to America's conference. Let me repeat that. America Conference. Paul, don't be ashamed to repeat it. America's Conference.
It has a good ring to it. No dissent here on the program. Hey, thanks for the call. Appreciate it very much. We are busy show. You've already heard Greg and Kirk Herbstreit. Ross Dellinger was fantastic. Joe Tessitore and Laura Rutledge in the next hour. The former commissioner of the SEC in about 2 hours, but the current commissioner is next.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
For a constitutional convention for dramatic reform. We don't know whether it will be at Independence Hall in Philadelphia or not, but we bring in the commissioner of the Southeastern Conference on a very momentous day in his league and around college athletics. Commissioner, thank you very much. We appreciate your time, and I know that there are certainly things that that everyone is being guarded about right now. Looking forward, but there's no guarding your reaction to the news that Oklahoma and Texas have accepted the invitation of the SEC to join in a couple of years. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Paul. And we've spent a lot of time talking about items of significance over the last year and a half or so. And this rockets to the top of that list. And appreciate the opportunity, the work done this morning by both boards and the opportunities ahead for us beginning in 2025.
And, you know, so many questions about this, and I also understand that, you know, there are complicated issues ahead. And, you know, I know in the release of all parties there is a date. Can you address the possibility that this happens sooner than 2025?
We've been focused on that July 1st, 2025 date. Both universities have relationships in their current conference that extend through that period of time, and we want to be respectful of that reality. And this is a ways to go. We're kind of dealing with a similar situation with our friends at CBS Sports as we work through a contract in a really healthy way for broadcasting our games. They've done great work. We want to be great partners with them. So, Paul, our focus is forward-looking and begins with the opportunity presented on July 1st, 2025.
Certainly, while there is tremendous excitement in this part of the country, naturally, Commissioner, there are those who are quite unhappy, including some people that you sit with on many important boards, and I know you've always spoken very highly of. Could you address the complicated relationship that a lot of people, at least perceptively, are looking at toward you and the commissioner of the Big 12, Bob Bowlesby?
Sure. I have had the opportunity to be in various settings around conference commissioners as these matters have played out in real time. Way back in the early 2000s, right in advance of a full gathering of conference commissioners, there was the addition by the ACC of Big East members. You can imagine the tensions there, play it forward. I was traveling to another full gathering of all the Division I conference commissioners in June of 2010, when the Pac-10 at the time was looking to extend itself into Texas and Oklahoma, and the six universities being approached there. I've had subsequent opportunities to watch colleagues work through those issues with expansion, again, of the ACC to the Big East or the Big Ten, adding members from the Big East and ACC. And there are those moments. We all have a responsibility to guide forward, to work, obviously, to lead our conferences, and I'm certain that we will work to do so moving forward.
Commissioner, there's certainly been some criticism directed from colleagues, which is really unusual, but it happens. And, you know, one of the things that I thought was so interesting was, it was almost, I'm going to paraphrase here because that's not exactly what the new Pac-12 commissioner said, but I mean, the inference was that this was all going on at the same time that you were sitting in with others, including Bowlesby, with the college football playoff. And I know it's a long question, but you're on the record of saying we were happy with four. I think one of the last times we talked, could you address those inferences from people that I'm sure you don't know that well yet, but ultimately will be sitting at very important tables with?
Oh, absolutely. I'm more than happy to be clear and direct. First of all, we are not the conference that's been clamoring for college football playoff expansion. That's come repeatedly from others, from commissioners, from presidents or chancellors of universities, athletics directors, head football coaches, even in the media. The call for college football expansion has been present. And we've said, and I've said to you many times, four has worked, is working, and it can continue to work. And I've even said that subsequent to the identification of a format for consideration. And we need to understand that's exactly where we are in this process. Here's a format after looking at a variety of options. And the charge for those of us appointed to a working group was to check our logos, our conference ball caps at the door, and think about college football. So let's just be candid. The Pac-12 hasn't had regular access into the playoff. I happen to be one who thinks an adjustment that opens that up should be considered. And so the allocation of automatic opportunities for conference champions is a nod to offering that consistency of opportunity for many. We could simply stay with the four best teams. I'd be satisfied or interested in discussing that further if there are concerns about the 12-team format entered. But I still think the values and the fundamentals and the objectives present in our working group's consideration are relevant today, even with the breaking news of this week, and deserve the kind of consideration that we all committed to provide way back in June. That doesn't mean it's automatic or that it will happen soon. I think there was a rush to think, oh, we'll just change this as quickly as possible. I, as you know, was never one of those. But the breaking news doesn't remove the relevance of the need to consider a different format moving forward.
Commissioner Sankey, it's interesting also to think about the number of things that have been going on and all the people that are involved in college athletics, but we're talking to you specifically. It was about a year ago that you were convening your athletic directors at a critical moment for COVID and all the things that have taken place since then. I know that is part of what you do in taking the responsibility many years ago to be the commissioner, but could you talk about the personal side of this, having to deal with so many critical issues that are usually that usually don't occur while you're trying to run a conference as big and as important as the SEC?
Wow, that's a question. So last year on this date, July 30th, as I recall, is when we announced the change to the start of our season in a 10-game format. I remember that because it's my brother's birthday. He lives in Hawaii, so I'll give him a shout out. It's also my father-in-law's birthday tomorrow, so he's turning 80, Paul. So you asked me about the personal side. Those of us who are commissioners are still trying to remember that my father-in-law, Tom Kessinger, is going to turn 80 tomorrow, and that I have to send my brother a text message, and events overwhelm that reality with great frequency. I just was visiting with Charlie Hussey in our office talking about our agenda for work on Monday. And I'm like, I don't even remember what a normal work day constitutes because the pace since March of 2020 has been so different. The issues coming so rapidly at us. Just the announcement today of a constitutional convention. So we're back to another look at the NCAA, name, image, and likeness issues. I'm fortunate, and I mean this, and I've made phone calls to people to have a great team of people around me, both in our office and those who serve as outside advisors, Paul. And I can't say that enough, because one of the learning lessons for me around leadership is I can't handle everything alone. I handle a lot. I have a lot of responsibility placed upon me. But this conference, the people in this conference, our presidents and chancellors, our staff and the people who lead our athletics programs are truly remarkable. And, you know, I was reminded, if I may, of the fact we arrived at a unanimous vote yesterday, and expressed my appreciation for Texas A&M University. I heard one of the callers talking about their move. They were a trailblazer into the SEC 10 years ago. And had an expectation for the future, and that's been disrupted because of circumstances around us. Yet their board's gathering on Wednesday. The communication and the learning opportunities for me and working with Kathy Banks moving forward are a hallmark of what it means to be in this conference. And I think that vote yesterday shows the personal aspect of relationships and work and the weight we all bear, yet the ability to work forward to prepare for our future.
Commissioner, before you go, and I mentioned it as we were coming on and you alluded to it, and that was the news about the Constitutional Convention. And I know that's a big topic that you are often called to talk about, but could you give us a reaction to what we are all just learning here a few minutes ago?
Sure. A few things. I had the opportunity to speak a couple of times with Mark Emmert just to understand in the wake of the Alston decision by the Supreme Court how the NCAA might consider adjusting. I'm absolutely open to this conversation. It clearly is something that is needed. What's not clear to me at this point is their path forward. And so I'm going to reserve my thoughts on my path forward for the moment. And really am interested, literally as I was walking over, my phone buzzed with the public announcement. So I'll be interested to digest what happened, learn a bit more about the NCAA Board of Governors conversation. I think the expectation is for rapid consideration of adjustment. And we have a lot of responsibility in the Southeastern Conference, a lot of expectations, a lot of resources and support. Great group of student athletes and leaders in our programs who are trying to figure out how this future plays out, what the regulatory landscape looks like, how the enforcement activities of the NCAA and accountability mechanisms can be reinvigorated and focusing on priorities. And there's a lot on the table. I think it's called a Constitutional Convention. I don't think I'll be required to wear a powdered wig or anything like that. But it speaks to the seriousness of the moment in many ways.
And it is a serious moment. And I want to close by just coming back to how we all began. And I know that there are just so many complicated issues. But as someone who is at the vanguard of all this, the absolute epicenter, from a personal standpoint, you mentioned this being at the top of the list of things that have happened, but is there any way to appreciate what is a significant historic moment in time?
In all honesty, not as much as you would think. My mind is spinning forward quite rapidly to all that's in front of us. Our athletics directors will meet in a few weeks. We have day-to-day work that takes place, so I had a few check-ins on that. I'm sure there'll be a moment, but it's not today because I recognize how much is to be done. And as I think about leadership lessons, I've benefited from learning, really through observation here, Paul. I've watched our coaches deal with the peaks of success and turn in a moment to the task at hand. I remember with Kevin O'Sullivan when he won the national championship in baseball a few years ago, they said something about, I hope you get to enjoy it a few days, and he went through like tomorrow's task list. And I've had others of those. So there's a lot of work, we're here in a moment, but there's much to be done and we don't have the luxury, whether it's COVID issues happening around us, the NCAA's announcement, the name, image, and likeness issues, congressional interest, state activities. There is a ton to do, and so I'll relax at my retirement party, I believe.
Well, Commissioner, we'll let it go at that, and I don't think that's anywhere in the near future. Thank you for the time. It's always great to catch up on just a few important issues like today.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you very much. The Commissioner of the Southeastern Conference, quite a lot to digest there, and we will do that when we come back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And we are back. Quite a conversation there with Commissioner Sankey, Joe Tessitore, and Laura Rutledge coming up in the next hour. Let us continue. And Jimmy is up next in Chicago. Hey, Jimmy.
Hey, Paul. Well, I guess when we look back on this, or the college football historians, decades from now, would it be a stretch to say that July 30th, 2021 will be a date that lives in infamy in the history of college football, in your mind?
Yeah, I think it will be a point of reference, both good and bad, Jimmy. And again, nobody knows where this is going. I have a fairly good idea, and so do you. And, you know, the academicians are going to point toward this day as the end of the world, and the rest of us are going to celebrate it.
Yes. And in regard to that point, I've really been surprised at the number of callers that have, I think, just expressed short-sighted of what the SEC's been able to do. And I think Greg McElroy mentioned it very effectively, to get two of the biggest brands in college football history added to what already the strongest conference in college football. It's really hard to express in words to me what that means, because it's something that probably 99% of college football fans that are in the know couldn't ever imagine this. I mean, it's the SEC now. It's different from everybody else, in my mind. And in regard to that, Paul, I wanted to ask you a question regarding the Big Ten, because in my mind, it appears that they were kind of caught flat-footed here, and they are really short of options right now. And I wanted to ask you, do you think if Jim Delaney was still commissioner of the Big Ten, that he would not have had any idea this was happening?
Jimmy, I have great respect for Jim Delaney, and I think he's one of the great commissioners in modern history, but I don't know how he would have known this was going on, frankly. nobody knew this was going on. We always get the books later, but I am, and you know, you can't ask the question right now, because legally there's no way you really want to answer it. But I really want to know the timeline on this, and it's worthy of a book, because quite frankly, how the commissioner juggled all these balls, and there's really only one way he could have pulled it off, and that was to keep a very small circle of people, and he also had to trust the other side, Jimmy, and what I mean by that is you had to hope that Texas and Oklahoma, and I'm sure they were using a law firm to give them cover legally, but you also have to hope that they weren't talking to anybody else either, if you follow me. But you couldn't afford to have a dual game going on at the same time, where they're talking to this league and talking to this league. You had to be convinced. I don't think with Oklahoma you had any doubt, because you and I know Oklahoma has back-channeled for many, many years with the SEC. But Texas was the one that nobody would have believed until last week.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I think maybe just the fact that they've been sucking wind in the Big 12 for more than a decade now had to maybe bring somebody in their hierarchy to the point of thinking that, hey, if we're not going to succeed in the Big 12, we've got such a huge brand name, let's explore getting into the SEC, where, yeah, we'll take our lumps for 3 or 4 years, but it would allow us to be able to sell the same thing that Texas A&M's been able
exactly.
to do
for yeah, yeah, there's no question. A&M, I mean, they've been watching the A&M story for years. And I thought it was interesting, too, that Joe Castiglione from Oklahoma mentioned – the Fox's decision to ram the Nebraska game down their throat at 11 o'clock. I mean, a lot had happened before them, but that certainly is an interesting tipping point you'll hear a lot about. Joe Tessitore and Laura Rutledge coming up shortly.